What you are listening to is real. The participants are not actors. They are real people with a case pending in podcast court. Hello, I'm producer Peter, and welcome to Cage Match, colon, a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, colon, podcast court. This is the tragic case of a man on a mission to capture Osama bin Laden and another who lost both his hand and his wife.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
Okay, so let's see. Your wife left town. You jumped off your roof into the pool. You caught COVID, and now you're on our Nicolas Cage podcast. Am I right on this timeline?
That's the long and short of it. Yep.
Ooh, I'm all about the short of it.
What are you drinking?
Jolly Rogers Pilsner. It's an American beer, which is important.
From right here in Seattle, is that correct?
Is that where we are?
Which is America.
Yeah, we finally doxed ourselves as living in Seattle.
Yeah, when I move to Portland, don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Also cut that part out about me moving to Portland.
When I move to...
Also cut out that last part where I said it.
When I...
There you go.
Great, thank you. Oh. Yeah, stop.
I thought that was Eric fucking up the audio. I was ready to blame him, but
it was this computer. This computer was made in China. If it was made in America, I think it would have. We wouldn't have been having this issue.
I don't want to tell you how to do your podcast, but if you do your podcast on a computer made in China, you're going to get weird Chinese voices, not good old fashioned American voices like we have here on Cage Match.
I have I watched some like, you know, real life interviews with Big G.
Oh, with Gary?
No, yeah.
Yeah, the G.
He doesn't have that voice.
No. Not as pronounced. He has
a voice.
It's less annoying than my voice, and it's less pronounced than Cage's voice.
I just didn't understand why the strong voice was in there. It
I think you nailed it right there. It's a strong voice.
Strong American voice.
It's the voice of the people.
They showed clips of him even after the movie, and it's just like, oh, he doesn't sound like that. Like, shit.
No, they immediately dispelled.
I know, it's kind of weird that they did that immediately afterwards, where it's like, I got so used to hearing Gary voice, and then it was like, oh, that's what he sounds like? Like a dude. Okay.
Now, that is what he sounds like after mainstream media has had their way with him.
Good point.
But if you listen to Gary just talking about Gary things, Gary's probably giving you the full-on voice. Is it just hard when I get excited and immediately kind of slip into a little Garyisms?
Yep, a little bit.
Slip into hard Gary? For me, too. Yeah, I love it.
You embody Cage's Gary pretty well there.
I think Cage's Gary embodies me pretty well.
I think Nick there finally felt seen by the mainstream media when this movie came out.
I refuse to let this movie die because I need it. It validates me.
I absolutely asked Peter like how it's made it this far into the what did it win against in round two to get it to round three?
It's fucking originally question. Adaptation, which upset
it did beat
me.
Adaptation the first go around.
But you've come around.
I still think it's wrong, but I love it.
Horn has not come around to that, though.
Most things I love are incorrect, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it
could happen to you.
Yeah, it could happen to you. Yeah, which, I mean, fair. That's fine.
It's been a deserved win every time.
Mm-hmm. It's been a win every time and a deserved win once.
It's a win in my heart.
A win's a win.
Yep.
Just like a W is a W. Hole.
You say what? It's going against Moonstruck tonight?
Yeah. Yeah. What are your thoughts on Moonstruck? Do you want to dunk on Moonstruck at all? A little shade?
Yeah.
We won't tell your wife.
There's no discussion which movie is more American. We could start right there. And if we're just...
Yeah, truth.
The Italians are not people. We're already starting off.
That is established canon on this podcast, yes.
Yeah. Okay, we do have to take that into account.
And we will later.
Nice.
And you are?
Are you looking at me? I'm Eric. Sorry, I'm remote.
Yeah. Eric, you are in our three-timers club now.
Woo!
Yeah, big fucking dog over here. That's some Gary energy.
You got that three-timer faster than a lot of our more preferred guests.
that's nice. Well, I'm often available in a pinch.
It's good when you've got COVID and your family is out of town, because we can just lock you down. It's like, what the fuck else are you got to do?
It's perfect.
Win-win for you guys.
Well, that's debatable, but we'll get through tonight.
So, Eric, you had never seen Army of One, yet you love it, correct?
No, introduced to it in round one of the podcast here. I mean, a character like this deserves to be explored. He's a guy that you'd be so fucking upset if he sat next to you at the bar. He would start talking and he would never stop. And no, some people like that. I know that Nick would enjoy that, and he would egg that on. He would ask goading questions, and you have a lot of Garys in your life, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably. Does that make me a Will Sasso?
Kinda.
Or am I a Paul Scheer? Sasso. Okay. Shit.
You're a Sasso.
You're a Sasso.
Am I the Scheer or are you the Scheer? I'm not a Gary. I'm a Scheer.
Oh, I found myself identifying with Gary. I think that we could all, there's a little bit of Gary in all of us.
Can I be the mute girl?
Yes.
She was still okay with everything that was going on too.
Not, I mean, was Sally,
she is very pro Gary camp.
Yeah. I mean, he brings her like rocks and shit.
No, he brings her nice shit. He brings his girlfriend rocks and shit.
Yeah, that's really weird.
I think that the trinkets are, I mean, they do the job. I mean, they work. He gives him the trinkets and it's like, okay, cool. You were in Pakistan for a month. Like, no big deal.
Israel rocks.
Yeah. Like, my wife puts up with some shit, I guess. But like, Gary really takes it to the next level. Like, if I just fucking bounce to Pakistan for a month, like, while neglecting serious medical treatment, like, there would be one fight at least. There would be one. We'd have one bad fight about that.
All right. So. What?
I don't know why that got me.
Why don't you give us the long and short of this real quick? Let's get your synopsis on the film.
Yeah, just like a quick paragraph ish.
I mean, how many times did Gary just say it right himself? He was just like, Gary was told by God that he needs to get to Pakistan to hunt down and kill, bring Osama bin Laden to justice, because America's just kind of been dicking around thinks that
gotta bring him back alive
for justice and stuff.
At the very least, he said he'd put a pistol in front of him and Gary and they'd pick it up and draw and it'd be fair. So,
yeah.
So he's not just, he's not just like complete vigilante, but I mean, hats off to him. He makes it to Pakistan. At least he doesn't do much work. He's got ideas on weird ideas on how to get there. I think hang gliding from Israel.
That was amazing. Boating.
Boating.
Yeah. Every time the hang gliding from Israel thing comes up, like every rotation of this, I have to go back to Google Maps and be like, wait a minute. It's like they're like a country away, right? And then you look at it and it's like, no, they're fucking like seven countries apart. It's so fucking good. It's like, hey, I'm gonna hang glide from essentially like east central northern Africa, that's a place, to
east central northern
wild Africa. Ass almost India. It's like,
how about you dumb this down for us Americans who barely know geography here?
Long way.
Ooh, I get it.
You Google long way.
All right.
Like, you want it in hot dogs?
Yes.
A lot of hot dogs.
Like Joey Chestnut level?
Ooh. Yeah.
I mean, are any of his actual, are any of the attempts, I mean, we know that he actually went to Pakistan. Are any of the hang gliding or boating attempts actually like real? Or is that just like ideas that they fictionalized on?
I choose to believe they are in my heart.
Yeah. I refuse to burst the bubble. In my mind, Gary is the perfect failure. He did all of the things.
It would have been great if he actually Magooed this and like pulled it off.
Oh my God.
The Las Vegas scene. I thought he was gonna walk out of there a millionaire and really finance the trip.
Oh man, I don't know. I know we're not talking about like a synopsis. We're just going into it. But I love that Las Vegas scene where he's just like convinced that the Colombians or the cartels are trying to kill him. They're like, we're just from Tijuana. We're here from the tequila festival.
Oh, that's even better. They're having like this fight, this discussion back and forth. Gary's speaking English. They're speaking Spanish and they're just.
And they all understand each other.
It's terrific. Loved it.
With the guy with the fucking slitty shades, like runs off and grabs like a cloak.
Yeah, the tray.
Yeah. And like just starts beating Gary with a room severs.
Well, I love how Gary's delusions don't even line up with each other. Like he has a delusion about watching MTV's Cribs Osama bin Laden edition. And then when he like imagines the fight they had later, he's like, where's your cool house?
Yeah. Where's your cooler cave with the pictures of the terrorists?
I did love Osama the third, because Osama Jr. is stupid.
Oh man. Yeah.
Okay.
My feeling on this movie is really weird in that like it is not a good movie.
No.
It is really fun and really fucking stupid. And what kind of blew my mind the other night was that, like, this is one of the better embodiments of a character that Nick Cage has ever done. He doesn't feel like Nick Cage. You can watch that movie and not know it's him and kind of be like, oh, that was Nick Cage? Shit. Fuck. That's cool. You know, you watch most other things and you're like, ah, there he is. You know, there's his character, persona, whatever. But I don't know if it's Gary voice. I don't know if it's the beard and ponytail. I don't know if it's just that he got into some character level that he hadn't hit in a while. But it is a really good performance, which is a weird thing to say.
There's a weird physical aspect to it because, yeah, he doesn't really look like Nick Cage in this film. I think the only other movies we could really come to where it's just like, where do we see that level of performance where you kind of lose the cage is this, Long Legs and Pig.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, I think there, like you hit on it with the physicality, there's also just like something about everything he does that screams middle-aged man who didn't stretch this morning. And
you mean us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel this.
I mean, I stretch every day, but that's...
Brag.
Yeah, humble brag.
No, not if you woke up like I wake up.
How do you wake up?
Rough.
But yeah, he's got such an incredible package that he brings into this. Like just the character, the voice, the physicality. It came at like a time when he wasn't putting out anything that anybody like
wanted to watch,
cared for.
Yeah, I mean, it was 2016. It was a rough window.
Some would argue that we're the only people who care about this movie.
Yeah,
that could be argued. No, nobody was asking for this movie, like, except for like Gary and his buddies. Like, it's probably big in Colorado and probably rural Oregon.
I think that this movie opened up a world for me, and that world is Nicolas Cage's Gary. But
do you think Gary shows this movie to people, like if he's on a date?
Yes,
absolutely. A fucking movie was made about you. I don't care if they like got it right. Like,
and Nicolas Cage, Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage portraying you.
Well, oh God, was it John yesterday where like he was reading the back of one of the boxes and said like Academy Award winner? Huh. I'm like, he has it. They don't take him away.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Would you say it's not like the MTV Video Award?
Exactly. They like take that shit away.
Oh, I'm with Peter. By all accounts, this is a bad movie. Like, none of the other characters are developed. The story is just totally random. But I think that the movie plays like a story that Gary is telling you. So it's just as dysfunctional as what a dialogue from Gary pretty much is. This guy's fun. He's a wild card. We love him.
I didn't think about that, but there are only like two scenes in this film where there's dialogue that Gary isn't in the scene, and that's the FBI agents or CIA agents, whatever they are, the government agents. And yeah, the way they talk is very not naturalistic, and the way they talk about Gary is very like not naturalistic.
I love
Rainn Wilson.
I love him wanting to be like a Dutch expat,
Dutch James Bond
living in Pakistan or whatever. I love that whole narrative of him continuously trying to go undercover in Pakistan, and then his director just being like, why are you doing this?
His director's favorite Bond was George Lazenby.
Yeah.
Because they go through every other one. Well, or Pierce Brosnan. Those are the two that don't get named, name dropped.
If it was Brosnan, you would at least say it.
The way he got into that role, like lied about being an actor and just he was an underwear model.
It's the only way I
fucking wacky. Things.
That's how you got this podcast gig. Yeah.
Underwear model?
I lied about being an underwear model. You're like, get Fooled on again. This show. And here I am, free balling.
Just loose all the time.
It's dangling. The American way, man.
I'm wearing some pretty flowy pants and don't have any underwear on under these.
Nice. Congratulations.
Oh, I love the mental image.
All right, nice. Eric.
So what was your favorite part about this movie, Eric?
I mean, the favorite part was Gary. I mean, the whole movie was Nick Cage and his Gary character. As I said, the rest of the movie just doesn't... I don't know. They don't really work on it, except for the extras. Holy smokes. They spent a lot of money on extras. But no, it was the patriotism was my favorite part of the movie. Gary is just my kind of patriot. You know, he goes up over there. He talks up America, but he's not a dick to everyone. He makes a lot of friends. He's very generous to the Pakistani people. In the interviews that I listen to, he calls them Pakis, which I don't think... sounds good at all. I don't know if that's what they call themselves, but
he is so charismatic. I want to hug him. He reminds me so much of this journeyman I used to work with from Colorado, who I refer to as Boat Trip. But I mean, they look the same. They don't sound the same, but they kind of hold the same opinions on a few things. And they are oversharers. And I love that about both of them.
The scene where Gary's on the plane going to Pakistan and just talking to that guy next to him who probably doesn't understand a word he's saying. But just, oh my God, to have to be on a fucking international flight next to that.
Can you imagine 16 hours with him in a middle seat?
I mean, we have hundreds of hours of you in the middle seat of this podcast. So,
oh, I'm middle seat. Yeah, middle seat.
Big middle seat energy.
Yeah,
it's got fair. A man spread.
Uh-huh. That's all that big dick.
Big Nick.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Big Jick.
Stop saying Jick.
You guys started this.
You specifically.
So this was your first time watching it. What was your...
But not your last.
What was... never. Like, once you open the army of one can... You are full of worms for life.
I think I've watched it one and two thirds times now.
Oh, nice. That is so good. I'm glad you came back for a second two thirds. So
that's the best two thirds.
What were there any like surprises in the film that really like took you
places
for a turn? What was your first like mental turn?
Oh, I mean, good Lord. For me, it was just, a couple things. Number one was Dr. Loaning Gary $1,000. That's a dangerous can of worms to open. Crazy patients start asking you for cash and you're like, ah.
Also, I'd like a reference to that doctor.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's looking at his paper. Gary, can't believe you're alive. This is crazy.
Yeah. Well, he did come into that conversation being like, your blood's looking good. You're living hard when nobody thought you would. And then it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess you're a reliable investment. That makes sense.
And still, on the kidneys thing, the fact that he kept on going to fucking Pakistan without ignoring his dialysis was just I don't know. It really made me believe in him. He said the Lord takes care of his soldiers. And I was like, that's the only way you could do it, was with some kind of divine intervention. And I think God would only help out an American in that situation, you know?
Well, God loves America.
I think so.
God's a British influencer.
Total fucker.
Yeah. How many times do I have to say allegedly in this next part?
Let's just do a blanket one.
Allegedly. Russell Brand's in this movie, who is going through some shit.
Yeah. I mean, we can't.
Britain's own Joe Rogan. The UK's own Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
I would love to see them fight.
Russell Brand versus
Joe Rogan.
I would think that Russell Brand would pull out some close-up magic, and I know that's not on his thing. That's not his brand, but
it's Russell Brand.
Hey,
but he's like the Chris Angel of like my like British comedian actors. Well, it's because I refuse to look at people's faces and remember who they are. So Perfect. He's British Chris Angel.
I could confuse him with a mind freak.
Mind freak. That's not all. Allegedly. Allegedly.
My mind was allegedly freaked.
I did not consent to this mind freaking.
I know I had to be talked into this movie the first time. And I enjoyed it the first time. It's so much fun. It's so dumb. And it really lucked out being the second episode, because I think if we would have gotten through a couple of rounds of this and known what we were doing, adaptation would have probably gone through.
I would have had a harder time
making a case,
convincing you guys to abandon all reason.
I
just have better foresight.
Prefer this to...
It could happen to you.
It could happen to you. Dude, like, Nick Cage's comedy output isn't... There isn't a lot of, like, really good comedy in his
film repertoire.
Yeah, like he's done comedies, but there isn't like any outside of
you're not dogging on Trapped in Paradise, are you?
I wasn't going to.
Bill Furpo.
But outside of like Raising Arizona, there's not any really like hijinks laden comedies.
I think that's less of a fault of Nicolas Cage than Nicolas Cage.
I'm not saying Nicolas
like manager.
Yeah, I'm not saying Nicolas Cage like is at fault. Agent, I'm just saying like in terms of like how we broken this down.
I do want some more like wild Nicolas Cage romps before he dies.
That sounded imminent.
I mean, we're gonna get to see him as John Madden here in a couple of years.
That's true.
Which allegedly, that's real. Let's pull off for a second. Allegedly, this is, and I don't have all the details, a film about the video game.
Nice.
So it's just about the Madden incredible video game series.
So he's gonna play the video game version of John Madden.
Yes.
Cage plays the titular.
Is this like a Wreck-It Ralph situation? Madden.
I sure hope so.
Oh my god! Like he's just trapped in a video game, and he has to. Oh, and Bo Jackson's out there fucking running down.
It's a different game.
You can't stop Bo.
You can't stop Bo.
That's impossible, man.
Oh, my God. You just got to like, I mean, Joe Madden could probably jump on the Bo train and ride it all the way through the stadium. I just cannot wait for Nicolas Cage with a Raiders logo on him.
You're going to love it.
It's going to be my entire life. I'm going to get that tattoo.
That's
on
a tattoo.
Nicolas Cage as Joe Madden.
John.
Yeah, I know. I'm
You keep on saying Joe Madden. You're such a fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, John Madden. Shut up, Eric. You've got COVID.
I know.
All right, let's do a quick round robin on a favorite scene from the entire movie. So, Eric, you go first. What was your favorite piece of this movie?
Man, it's really hard to get away from the chicken wings at the beginning. Really sets the tone. But I think it's really when he's at the diner discussing who is going to play him. And it's Nick Cage getting to talk about like, aren't I like Nick Cage from Con Air, huh? And it was just, it was too meta for me, but it was so much that it was so over the top that I was okay with it.
Good pick.
I'm still a fan of, you know, Pygmies made that toilet.
Home Depot scene is so good.
Pretty good.
It's just like one liner after one liner.
take small shits.
Let's give credit where credit's due. That's a Lowe's. Everything is blue.
Okay. Lowe's sucks.
I know.
God, Lowe's is the worst.
But yeah, pygmy shits.
I love a home improvement store. I kind of love hang glider scene.
Yeah. Mm.
Not like when he's purchasing it.
That's great.
But when he's talking to the kids and they're just like, we don't speak English. And he's like, move away. And they're like, you're an idiot. And then he takes his janky ass hang glider and just runs off the side and immediately just crashes. It's like he fucking cuts up the hang glider into pieces. And there's so much tape on it. When he goes to fly, it's just, how dumb is this, Gary?
I also
dumb
love,
enough. I love this guy.
I love when he thinks that boat slip is a parking spot.
Yeah, boat cop scene is maybe my favorite part.
I was going to say that as well. It's terrific.
It's so good.
He comes in with undisclosed broken arm. It's just,
do you know how to sail? No, that's how I broke my arm.
Or just when he's on the boat recording himself, I'm still here 10 days later, and then just then camera goes over the side and you just hear him just yelling, and then he wakes up on a beach
but he does admit, like, not that much longer or not that much later in the film that he can't swim, which is cool that he thought of sailboat was his first choice. And I'll just eat the mussels off the bottom.
To be fair, many sailors of the olden times, I mean, why bother learning how to swim?
Yeah, you're gonna die. Where are you gonna go? Ocean.
Yeah. Yeah, you fall out. Yeah, just fucking die.
I did love his reasoning that, like, you know, the people who invented boats lived a long time ago, and we're smarter than those people, so I'll be fine.
Yeah,
I'm a 21st century man.
Man.
What are your favorite chicken wings?
Oh, usually classic. I'm dipping them in blue cheese dressing usually. But I'll go anywhere. I'll even do boneless.
Okay, so you're a big Nuggets fan.
Yeah, you're a slut.
So, okay, here's a good question. Easily pulling off of that. Favorite chicken wing joint in the greater area? This is for our core audience, the Seattleites.
Honestly, I've really, it's going to be Billiard Huang's, fish sauce wings. Fuck they, yeah. They get me every
it's
such time.
A good wing. It's a really good wing.
Yeah. Good choice.
I don't think I've had those wings.
Oh, they're good.
Yeah. Billiard Huang. Fuck with
those wings.
Check it out.
Yeah. Okay. So Eric, give us your like last pitch on this movie. What's your closing argument in the case of Army of One?
Yeah. Why should this go forward?
Well, as I was saying before, this is definitely the most American movie out of your two choices by far. And I think that in times like this, we just need to stay together as a country. And I think Gary is the guy that's going to help us do that. Patriotism. Yeah, I think that's the main reason. I think that we should choose it for America.
If you could go back in time, would you elect Gary to Team America World Police?
I would say that Gary is already, I mean, he's a real life. He's like the Phoenix Jones. He's like the real life Team America. Yeah.
Oh, he was so much better than Phoenix Jones.
Because he wasn't selling crack.
Traveling Phoenix Jones.
Yeah. Phoenix Jones.
Allegedly.
Jones in for justice.
Phoenix Jones could kick my ass. I'm just going to throw allegedly in there.
That's because he wore a bodysuit. I bet they goosed him up.
Still kick my ass. Especially if he brings the bear spray.
Well, yeah, that's a guaranteed winner.
That's how he won most of those fights.
Start fighting him with a ski mask? Wait, that doesn't protect the good stuffs.
We got to get out of this one.
No. How do I beat Phoenix Jones? I almost said Phoenix, right?
All you got to do is just not buy crack and he'll go to jail.
Yeah.
And you'll stay out of jail.
Mm. All right.
Although I think it was speed.
Speed.
I think he sold club drugs.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I think that it was seems just like it would fit probably ecstasy.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry for accusing you of stealing. Allegedly accusing.
He didn't want people to get DUIs, so I think he was just trying to help them get home safe. A little speed on your way home.
Selling them a drug that keeps them high for 6+ hours is not a way to get people home
keeps
from the club.
Focused.
That's how you stretch your drug
needle,
dollar.
Yeah. Needle pick me up. That That's why fair. You got arrested.
That's how you fight inflation and rising cost of living. Do long-term drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do those long-lasting drugs.
What do you think of just Nick Cage's overall performance?
Oh, it's fucking insane. He is so committed to Gary. I am so curious how much. Do you think he actually spent any time with Gary?
No,
no,
no, I don't think so either. I think that he just kind of like took the story and was like, I'm creating my own Gary character to a point, you know.
Character.
Do you think we could crowdfund an unauthorized sequel? Like, what would Gary be taking on now?
Probably cameo. We could probably get a Gary cameo.
He's taking on TikTok.
Yeah. Okay, that's less of a feature film.
What is Gary taking on?
Is he going to fix the Ukrainian problem? Is he going back to Israel?
Israel seems like a real hotspot right now. Let's not talk that one.
Hang glide into Pakistan.
I think he's going to solve the chicken wing crisis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Best wing.
Gary's next adventure should be close to
Gary's hot wings.
Gary's going to solve the chicken wing crisis being that courts have alleged that if you buy boneless wings, you have to expect bones.
Yes.
Did you not see that case?
No.
Your face said no. Yeah. Somebody ate some boneless wings. There was a bone fragment in it and they were in some way personal injury lawyer.
Sure.
Allegedly. Injured by such chicken wing bone, and courts have decided that if you get boneless wings, you have to just grin and bear that
assume
there may be
that
bones.
There may be a bone. Yeah. Okay,
I mean they're made from a slurry.
Yeah, I like a slurry.
A slurry can be pushed through a sieve. A bone cannot. I've tried.
Good night, everybody.
Thank you, Eric, for.
Good night, guys. Thanks for having me. I hope you all stay healthy.
Do you want to plug anything while you're here?
Yeah, I'm going to be playing on Fridays and Saturdays at the. Good night, guys.
Bye, Eric.
Love it. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. Let's be real. Oh, that was the sound of a can opening.
Oh, we're used to that.
Yeah.
I have like a ton of, I can identify that in a waveform really easily.
That's actually a really good skill.
It's a good skill, okay. Right? Oh, look at this waveform. And what happened right there at 39 seconds? I believe that was a tall boy Rainier, actually.
Yeah, you can get the exact. Oh, that frequency? That's a fine vintage.
Almost out. It's like right on the edge.
Yeah.
Maybe it was outside for a little bit in a cooler. I don't know.
Oh, I would call that a 54 degree PBR with a hint of lime.
Peter just looked at the audio and he's like, oh, I'm sorry. You got a short pour in that can. That's no point.
Oh, that was all air.
On that one.
Just bubbles. Sorry.
Enjoy all those burps and hiccups later, sucker.
So I don't know if you have ever listened to us, and it's okay.
Never once. No, just kidding. I've listened to some episodes in preparation. And also when Peter told me about starting a podcast that was about Nicolas Cage movies.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Well, I was just going to say, I'm Nick.
Hello, Nick.
And this is my co-host, Sean.
Sean, I'm Sean.
This feels so gross. It's like, never mind.
And who are you?
Is it the long pause? Who the hell are you?
It's one upset. What the fuck?
I'm
we can swear. I didn't. Yeah.
Please. You can
this
swear
is an NPR. Away. I forgot. This mic really had me.
NPR loves swears.
Yeah.
Go on NPR and just say the craziest shit. It'll be fine.
You know, their tiny desk concerts have swears.
Yeah, they had guar. Like they
did
have
to
guar.
Yeah.
You can't hear the fake blood through the audio format. I don't know why you would have Gwar.
Yeah, it is actually very disappointing that they don't just put Visqueen down over the entire Tiny Desk studio. I would have expected that. It, you know, honestly, it's probably the lack of Dave Brockie. If Dave was still around.
Kept things a little cleaner.
Aww. Well, if Dave was still around, I feel like they wouldn't. Well, they wouldn't have been invited on, but they probably would have just discreetly trashed it.
Oh. Discreetly trashing. That's classy. That's maturity, you know?
That's where you hide all the blood and semen pumps in, like, nipple suits.
Smart.
Yeah. I've been to libraries. I know how this
works. God, I hope you guys know who Gwar is and what we're talking about.
People know Gwar.
I've been to the Gwar.
Okay, all right. Personally.
The overlap, the Venn diagram of people who listen to this podcast and know Gwar is a circle.
Yeah. Fair point.
My fifth Gwar show coming up this year.
Hey, nice. So,
pretty good.
Congratulations.
Wait, the fifth one this year or fifth one?
Fifth total.
Total.
Yeah.
Fifth one this year or fifth one, comma, this year?
Oh, man. No, if I was just a Gwar groupie, you guys would have known about it.
Is there a name for Gwar groupies?
I literally was going to have, yeah, I was going to.
Gwar piece?
Ew.
Ew.
I hate that.
Come-alongs?
Yeah, all right. Come-alongs is pretty good.
Gwar goyles. That's too cute. Never mind. I rescind Gwar goyles.
Bohabs.
We need when we have Eric on later, we need to talk about ICP and the Juggalo community in Bellingham.
Oh, yeah. God.
Bellingham Juggalo community. Yeah, I mean, that ties into Army of One.
I mean, Gwar doesn't tie into Moonstruck.
Doesn't it? Gwar ties into everything.
We're talking about Moonstruck today, folks.
Yeah. Well, just kick us off.
We already did the intro.
As you surely guessed.
Nick, take it again.
What do we do here, Nick?
Oh, so on this podcast, we generally are we here for the Nicolas Cage one tonight?
Yes.
Oh, okay, so tonight we're talking about Nicolas Cage.
Yeah, not Gwar tonight.
Yeah.
Wow.
On this podcast, we take
Sorry, this is
64.
Not fucking an animal.
On this podcast, we take 64 Nick Cage movies, final four bracket style, and face them off against each other. Pair them off. There we go. Those are words.
That is leading the witness.
And we'll eventually figure it out. What the ultimate Nick Cage film is.
Yeah, based on metrics that change constantly. Sometimes it's most cagey, sometimes it's most rewatchable, sometimes it's
whatever
Army of One.
Sometimes whatever.
Sometimes it's just whatever pisses Sean off.
Yeah, or sometimes you off. Whatever reason, it's always not whatever 8mm goes up against, which, true. Shocking.
Well, 8mm keeps going up against lesser films, but to address the point of what pisses me off, those are miscarriages of justice. So,
And this is a court of law in podcast world.
Fuck, I'm a terrible judge. I forgot my gavel.
Oh, man. How are you going to judge?
Have you reached out to Judge John Hodgman yet?
No, not yet.
Oh, anything can be a gavel if you use your imagination.
Peter still has the audio from the last gavel, so I'll just say bang.
I do have a good gavel clip.
Oh, whack.
Yeah.
Whack, whack.
Bang, bang, bang. So we're joined here with a guest.
I'm Nick.
You're not the guest. Fuck off.
Fuck.
Hi, Lauren.
Where? Oh, it's me.
You're the guest today.
Oh,
this
shit.
Was not an audition to
You're
take over my
now.
Role. Unless you like it.
Unless I like it.
Yeah, this is an audition.
Yeah.
Prepare a 32-bar excerpt and key of C. Just follow my lead.
Okay. Yeah. Somebody prepared today.
We were supposed to prepare.
I didn't even change shorts.
Since.
I should.
We're not here for your questions. We're here for your answers.
Yeah.
Guest, right, not interviewer. My bad, my bad, my bad. Where is your 32-bar excerpt, huh?
You do not want that from any of us.
And a one, and a two.
I'm not a 32-bar excerpt. I'm just a single crescendo.
of what sound? Can you give me a little, can you break me off a little piece of what that sound is?
We've been doing this for 2 years. How have I never seen that?
I'm about to boost.
Pew, pew, pew. All right. Otherwise,
welcome to Cage Match.
So I've been in one parade in my life.
Go on.
So in high school, I came from a pretty small town, and we had this thing called River Fest. We were right along the Columbia River, and every year they'd have the River Fest princesses, and the Kiwanis Club would do things and whatever. Doesn't matter. There was a parade involved. And so one year I was like, you know what? I bet there's no rules against this. I'm not going to read into it. I'm just going to apply. So I applied to be a Riverfest princess. And
the story went exactly where I wanted it to.
There is exactly no rules prohibiting men from being Riverfest princesses.
As it should be.
Airbud, you airbutted. You airbutted.
Yeah, I did. I just put it all out there.
Was there a rule about dogs being river princesses?
You know, we'll never know. Because
they stopped after this year.
The year that I did it, I went all the way. I kind of participated in the canned food drive, and I kind of participated in the public service stuff, but I definitely participated in the parade, where I got to sit in a 65 Bel Air and just wave like this, and they gave me a crown to wear.
Swishy
that
arm.
Was decidedly larger than all the women's crowns, and it's like they didn't even want me there, but they had to give me the bigger one because, you know,
your giant head.
Yeah,
massive dome.
Yeah, it's my dome. So I got to be in this parade, and
as the Riverside princess,
the Kiwanis Club stiffed me for my very small scholarship they were supposed to give me, which I can't really fault them for, as I barely participated in the process. I pointed out the problem, and the next year a bunch of other dudes applied, and they're like, we can't do this, and shut it down.
They could have just come up with a rule to stop that.
Nope. They're like,
or they could have just said princes and princess. Like, you really could just say, and
they really could have
could have just added a conjunction.
So obviously we're here today to talk about Moonstruck. As you can't tell.
I said that earlier.
Obvious.
Yeah. I'm here to talk about non sequiturs.
Yeah. It is a supermoon tonight, so congratulations, Bella Luna.
Bella Luna.
That's a hot fucking moon. That's Cosmo's moon.
Mm-hmm. That's Cosmo's moon.
Lauren, who are you?
That's a big question. My man, my guy. I am a former Riverside princess, and I'm here with a grudge, because you have besmirched the good name of our institution.
That's what I live for.
No, I'm just kidding. I am a friend of Peter's, but also an arts person, a theater person. And a big fan of talking bullshit about movies. I think that's maybe the most relevant introduction I could possibly give you.
Okay. Biggest live performance. Doesn't have to be directly involved with you.
Ooh.
Ooh la la.
I'm going to come back with my own right afterwards, and it's a doozy.
Well, there was an almost mishap, which was that in one of the shows that I wrote, I had several layers of clothing. One of them was supposed to be safety pinned, the other one was not. Somehow someone safety pinned both, and I was there was basically like a quick change that I was supposed to do, but both things had been pinned together. Oh, that's a fun visual. both items of clothing had been safety pinned together. So for a brief moment, I very nearly had to go out on stage with no shirt on and had no opportunity to come back. There would have been no opportunity to come off stage because the shirts were pinned together. It is the closest I've come to like an actual heart attack or a burlesque performance, depending on how you look at it. Anyway, and you?
That's pretty fantastic.
I
was never much of an onstage guy. So I did a lot of lighting design and whatnot through college and afterwards, but I'm up at the lighting console and I'm having an off mic conversation or off headset conversation with my spot op, and it gets into like an escalating kind of dare thing because neither of us were really invested in the show at this point. We'd seen it. And so, like, I'm now sitting in the booth, like, without pants on, running the console. And then
that's just how you get comfortable. I feel like you should put that in like a rider.
Yeah, so I accidentally kicked the power supply out of the console, and then all the lights in the house and everything went out like mid show. And like,
and you had to run out.
I'm scrambling to like get my shit back on.
The lights in my pants.
As I'm here, well, initially pants, because I can hear the stairs and I can hear people coming up to see what the fuck happened. And I've got like my stage manager completely oblivious to what I'm dealing with, trying to like address this situation. And then pretty soon, like, the head of my department is up there and he's like,
oh,
I'm like, I mean, luckily it's dark in the booth too, right? And I get my shit back together.
All pants are on in here. Don't worry, folks.
As we're finding the power supply that got kicked out and getting the show back in. So long story short, ETC really needs to get their shit together and put like
chastity locks on your pants.
No. It's theater. Pants are coming off. They need to secure the power supply in the back of their consoles.
The power supply. Is that what you call it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, ETC could just come over here and secure this power supply.
Horrific.
Okay.
So, Lauren, why don't you tell us about Moonstruck?
Yeah, give us a quick rundown of the movie Moonstruck.
Yeah, just pull up the Wikipedia page. Just right. Cher is un-yassified. She is noified. She is made to look less cute than she currently is in 1987. And she is proposed to by a man old enough to be her father, whose name is Johnny. And he, as soon as he proposes, he leaves the country to go visit his ailing mother. And then Cher has to go tell everyone in her family and everyone in his family they're going to get married next month, because that's how long it takes.
That's proper wedding planning.
Yeah, exactly. And as she's talking to Johnny's family, she meets Johnny's much, 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 much younger brother, Nicolas Cage, who, I mean, of course, as any sane person would do, Nicolas Cage and Cher hit it off whilst this grandpa aged fiance is away. And it is a film where every character thinks that they're the main character of an opera. And maybe they are. Maybe that's what this film is.
Yeah, I know his name is Johnny and Ronnie. I got it this time. Dickass. Peter was writing down their names, Johnny and Ronnie, for me because I was getting them confused last time.
But which one's which, Sean?
Ooh. Ronnie's Nicolas Cage.
You got it.
Yes. Brilliant. Let's see. Wait, is there a cute mnemonic we can give you in some like how does Ronnie and prosthetic hand? How do we make that a nice little pun?
Ronnie Tremaine. That won't be confusing at all. No, Ronnie Tremaine. I'll remember that. What? Famous cripple.
Ooh, wait, no.
Oh, that guy, you, Nick.
No, I refuse to laugh at your jokes. You know better.
No, I think everyone in this movie thinks they're the main character in an opera. It sums it up really well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And maybe that was what Shammy was going for.
I think it's still wild that the amount of time between engagement to sleeping with your fiance's brother is less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
It is the next day.
Yeah.
He's a wolf.
Yeah. He's a wolf. He's got a wolf inside him.
Is this where the two wolves things came from?
Yes. There are
you
two
three wolves.
Sorry, two wolves inside you.
One of them's Nicolas Cage.
One of them wants a well-done steak and one wants
and will not get it.
Okay, so Sean, here's your tattoo. Two wolves.
Ooh.
One of them with Nicolas Cage's face. One of them is a straight up wolf. The other one is a wolf with a Cage face.
That's like an old manuscript.
One of them is John Travolta. One of them is Nicolas Cage.
Two wolves. One is John Travolta and one is Nicolas Cage.
I refuse to get a Travolta tattoo.
Everyone's got a Travolta wolf in you.
Technically, underneath that, Travolta face is a Nick Cage heart.
That's true.
I'll just get a face of John Travolta. I'll get a tattoo of John Travolta and just tell everyone it's Nick Cage.
Perfect.
That's fine. Yeah.
So, Lauren, had you seen this movie before?
No, I hadn't. So the reason I was excited about it is because so I just graduated from a program, a musical theater writers program called BMI, Lehman Engel Musical Theater Writers, something, something workshop. And so one of my colleagues in year two of this program, the assignment is to adapt a film. And one of my colleagues chose to adapt Moonstruck. And I was like, why does this film seem so perfect to be adapted to a musical? And so it's perfect because it's such high camp.
Is there a My Hand song?
My Hand. My wife.
And I think it's because Shanley had opera in mind. Like, it's so full of like references specifically to Bohème. Like, the soundtrack is half Bohème anyway, and like core points in the plot revolve around going to see like the date that Cher and Nicolas Cage have to go see Bohème at the Met. Like, I think that what they were going for was like, let's pretend this is an opera but nobody's singing. Because like the definition of melodrama, right, is melodic drama. Like, that's the word. Like, the etymology of that word, melodramatic, is like, if you call somebody melodramatic, you're calling them opera-ish, you know, which is like, of course that's Nicolas Cage. If any actor, it's fucking Nicolas Cage. by his own admission, you know, he's not into the naturalistic.
I love your connection here with just being like, oh, you know, it's an opera, but nobody's singing. And nowadays, everybody's making movies where it's like, oh, no, it's a musical, but we're not going to promote it as a musical. It's like, we need butts in seats.
Yeah, no, we're going to do a wicked movie with no music.
Yeah, right.
Those people are going to be so mad.
Yeah, it's like, oh, well, you should just know. If you want it to be a musical, then you should just know it's a musical. But if you don't want it to be a musical, then like, we're not going to tell you. And you'll just have to find out. Willy Wonka, Timothy Chalamet singing for some reason.
Oh, Mean Girls. You should have known. There was a musical note in the logo.
Yeah.
But also just like a weird...
Even though Mean Girls, the film that wasn't a musical, already exists. It's already there.
That was
and
my next thing.
Slapped. It's a good movie.
Good movie.
Yeah. I hear the musical movie is not so much.
I don't know. Just let musicals be musicals.
Thank you. Good Lord.
There's a market for it. It's fine.
So we've seen this movie now at a bare minimum of three times. So I'm kind of curious to see what Nick and Sean have to say about watching it again and again and again by comparison to seeing it kind of fresh, but in a lens of seeing the opera version of it from Lauren.
This movie's great. I love it.
Yeah.
It's just so unhinged. No scene makes any sense. Like when Johnny is proposing and he's getting heckled by everyone in the restaurant.
That's a nice suit.
He's ruining his suit.
Oh, like, wait, I would have
bought a ring.
Can
he get on the floor in his suit?
Oh. And he kneels down and Bobo's like, oh, he's going to wrinkle his suit or whatever.
Oh, man.
That is incredible.
Love Bobo.
Also, how
best Bobo?
I think this is the best Bobo.
You think so?
I mean,
of all the Bobos.
Retirement Plan Bobo is really good, but that's because it's Ron Perlman talking about Iago and shit.
And he's just so like nonplussed about things. And he's, I think Retirement Plan Bobo is the better Bobo.
I'm with you.
We're a Bobo podcast now.
Yeah.
It's a pro Bobo. Pro bono, pro Bobo. And you do it for free, so it is pro bono.
Come back for,
guess, Retirement Plan again?
Yeah.
Do it again. The monkey.
No, that's a bonobo.
Wasn't the monkey on The Simpsons Bobo?
But it's pro bono pro Bobo. It's on Bono. Is this the pro bono pro bono pro Bobo?
No, this is all Bobo no Bono.
Ooh, pro bo No. Fuck. I had it. It was so close.
It's rough. It's a rough ride.
That's what she said. Wow.
God, we're shock jocks now?
And Peter's the one who gets noise canceled.
I'm just really trying to get my weekends back.
Yeah, I get it.
It's Monday.
We've been doing this for 2.5 years.
Oh,
it's
fuck.
We're deep in.
I gotta call my boss.
Just know everybody's gonna call so my mom. Because like the next scene, she drops him off at the airport, and then the old woman puts a curse on the plane.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I like that.
And then tells her about it.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you know someone on that plane? I did curse it, so.
Sorry.
Final Destination 4.
Yeah.
Like nobody, four came out like 20 years before the first one.
Yeah.
You know, I make this joke, but then the Star Wars prequels exist.
True enough.
Yeah. Final Destination Origins.
Every part of this movie is just so unhinged and makes no sense and should be bad, and it's great. I love this film so much.
Yeah.
This film is a great ensemble film. It succeeds in every scene. It doesn't have to have Nicolas Cage. It's Cher is terrific. The grandpa is terrific. The dogs are terrific.
The uncle and aunt who are just horned up for each other after all these years. Yeah, I get I misty. Like too. For some reason I'm like tearing up. Like I just love each other so
That scene is
yeah, it's
so
a terrific
sweet.
Couple. They're nice.
John Mahoney is great in
I
this.
I love them.
The liquor store owner and his wife are great.
The hairdresser even is like, she's got a whole life. The one who's like, I've been waiting to cover your grades for 3 years. Like, it's like, this scene is this long and you've got a whole backstory for this woman. Like, what are we doing? Everyone is good.
Okay, have we figured out what the timeline for the entire film is? How many days this takes place over?
I mean, I think it's like a week maximum.
Is this like an episode of 24?
Yeah. An episode of 24. I have never chain smoked so many cigarettes than when 24 was on the air. And I'm not even like that into like watching TV shows, but I would go home and like it would be Christmas break and I'd go up to my parents' house and I'd pull out the newest Blu-ray or DVD set of 24, watch the whole season. And just like chain smoke the whole time. And then my dad would he worked swing shifts. He'd come home at like 4 a.m. and we'd just sit there and smoke cigarettes. This was a disgusting time when people smoked indoors, AKA the early 2000s.
That seems late for smoking indoors.
No,
depends on where you were.
If it's your own house.
Well, they didn't get rid of it until like, 2004. Five?
That's fair. I lived in San Francisco.
See, I was 21 because I was still smoking in bars.
So, Lauren, you would cast yourself as a fan of this movie, right?
I would. I mean, it's a weird one. You're absolutely right that it shouldn't work. It shouldn't make sense. But it. I mean, there's some moments that sort of take you out of it. I think like there are some moments that are like those cat callers are violently staring at Cher. Like. Yell, like, why is the camera still on those cat collars? Still.
As a construction worker, I feel particularly called out.
Called out.
Yeah. What do you have against cat calling?
So much, my friend.
I do really like when she comes out of the department store and accidentally walks, like, almost bumps into the nuns, and the nuns are just like, watch it!
I was really hoping for more to be made of that moment. Like, all it was like, face acting, and there was no, like, verbal confirmation of what that interaction was. I wanted the nuns to be involved somehow. I guess it was just a reminder of, like, she's off to cheat on her fiancé.
Of 2 days.
Yeah.
Oh, what the when she goes to confessional.
Oh yeah. So I was wondering, do you think that the priest actor was Cosmo, her dad? He sounded kind of similar, and they don't show him because he's a priest and anonymity and all that. But I was like, is that fucking Cosmo? Is that what's his name? Gardenia.
I don't know.
His last name is Gardenia, which is a fucking sick ass name.
It's pretty good.
It's a flower, my friend.
To Jardinier, but
oh,
I do like if it had been Jardinier.
Now somebody's fluent.
Oh, this guy likes pickled vegetables.
Yeah. This guy, he's got a small patch of agricultural land.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's Vincent Gardenia.
Yeah.
And he's a big meatball.
A big meatball. No, the thought that I had was that he called her by name, and I was like, wait, are they not supposed to? I've never been to confessional, so if any of you have,
it's weird.
Help clarify this. But like, the point is that you can't see each other, right? Like, the point is that the priest doesn't know who you are. You don't know who the priest is.
You can't see each other in the same way that when you wear specific fishnets, you can't see things. It's like, you know, it kind of masks and obscures, but you know who the priest is because you go to that church.
This would be the one person standing up in front of everybody and talking anyway.
Yeah, and if you're a good Catholic, your priest is going to know who you are because you actually go to confession.
And right. There's a whole rigmarole to get to that point where you have to learn a bunch of shit and have your first communion. And you go into another room with the priest by yourself beforehand.
Alone with no other adults. Boy, there's wine involved. He offers you a cookie.
This sounds like something I don't have to address about Catholicism.
Yeah, this sounds something. It sounds like something I don't
the
remember.
Catholics don't like me for a lot of reasons.
I got kicked out of communion class.
I got kicked out of Sunday school.
Yeah, we covered both of these things.
Yeah, that's good. We're terrible.
You're good hosts. Nice work.
I need some actually to sip on.
Right. There you go.
Anyway, the sentence I was finishing was just that, like, he calls her by name. He's like, okay, Loretta, think about the fact that you're cheating on your fiance. And I was like, is that okay? Is that allowed?
Listen, they're divine. They know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Direct line. All that. Anyway, go on, Peter. You were going to say a whole other thing.
So, Catholicism and the Olive Garden. When you're here, you're family.
There you
we
go.
Just know each other. It's just what it is.
And weird things happen out back.
Yeah, tongue stuff.
And there's an uncle you don't talk about.
Okay. It's not your uncle in the church.
When you're here,
it could be. It can't be your dad in the Catholic Church, but come at us, Catholics.
Yeah.
I only recognize the Holy Father.
Okay, let's do a round robin here of favorite scenes.
I mean, my hand, my bride's classic, but I still, my favorite scene is the end when everyone's just sitting there waiting. Oatmeal.
Yeah, the oatmeal scene is definitely my favorite. My favorite scene, including Nicolas Cage, is the breakfast table at the end. My favorite scene, not including Nicolas Cage, is when all the old men are hanging out at that grave and the dogs are just walking over people's graves and like peeing on stuff. And
wrecking shit.
Grandpa is just complaining about his shithole son who won't pay for the wife or pay for Cher's wedding. It's good. I just love that old man. And I love just knowing that the actor is deaf and he's just sitting there like waiting for people to stop talking to say his line.
I say this every time, but my favorite line in the film is during the breakfast scene and he just starts crying and Cosmo's like, "You okay, Pa? I'm confused."
Yeah. Oh, actually, I may even back it up even further. My favorite scene might be when all the dogs come into that house and then the one dog misses the stair and it
shit
stumbles
on that stair.
Every time I fucking die.
This is a stormtrooper bumping his head on the door.
For real. Yes. It's such like a peak of reality. And that's what I love about
it's
this
so
stupid
authentic.
Movie. It does feel authentic. So Lauren, what's your favorite?
Oh my God. That's a tough question. I mean, cause I feel like, well, okay. So, I mean, the premise of this podcast, I must ask for clarification. Are we specifically talking about the quality of Nicolas Cage or the quality of film?
Don't ask
or...
us hard questions.
That's for us to decide once you're off mic.
Yeah.
Once we've sent you home.
I don't know. It's a combination of things. Best performance. Is it the most cagey performance? Is it him embodying a character best? Is it more fun? I don't fucking know.
Neither do we. That's what keeps it interesting every week.
Yeah.
This is podcast it's court, fluid. But it does have a lot of fucking hard rules.
Yeah,
like regular court, we're horribly yeah. corruptible.
Yeah, well, because the gavel's gone, how could there be justice with no gavel? Hey,
you don't know we had a... We've got gavels. Whack, 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 whack.
Yeah, bang, bang, bang.
Bang, 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 bang. You're right, I heard them. Gosh, I sure did love, and this is purely personal. This is purely, like, I loved the scene of the two of them going to the Met Opera and Cher being like, I don't know about the opera. Have you ever been to the opera? But I've been to the opera. And then going and being like a wreck and just like being all up in her feelings. Because, like, I mean, as a musical theater nerd, as somebody who is partnered to an opera conductor, who is in rehearsal currently for an opera in a Berkshire Opera Festival. That's where he is right now. Like, it is so lovely to remind people that the point of art is not to be like over your head. It's not to be like, we're going to look down on you if you don't do the etiquette properly, if you clap at the wrong time, whatever. The point of art is to go feel feelings really big, especially opera. The point of opera is to make you feel really gigantic, outsized feelings. And that's all anyone is asking. That is all these legendary composers want from you, is just to make you feel stuff really big.
Yeah, it's not for the head, it's for the heart.
I do love how she gets tripped up on the fact that, like, she dies because she has tuberculosis, and she's hung up on, like, but she kept singing with tuberculosis.
She's coughing her brains off, but she had to keep singing. It's like she couldn't quite tell, like, the difference between the actor or the singer and the story. Yeah. Like, the line was a little blurred for her, which feels applicable to the rest of the movie.
Adorable.
The rest of the movie isn't sure if real life needs to be naturalistic and real, or if real life needs to be a little extra big, a little melodramatic. But yeah, I just love that the moment where like the hand holding, where she like holds his wooden hand and like she's got tears rolling down her cheeks. Oh, it's just like that particular piece too is just so beautiful. Like, oh, I love it. It just gives me feelings.
So I still don't know if I've seen Cher in any other acting performance. Like,
have you not seen Splash?
Oh, okay. I've seen Splash.
She's not in Splash. Mermaids. You're thinking of Mermaids.
It's Mermaids. Yeah.
Mermaids.
Yeah, which has no mermaids in it. Before. Nary what? A mermaid. Splash is Daryl Hannah.
This podcast is on hiatus until Mermaid has more Splash in it.
Did you watch Witches of Eastwick?
Witches of Eastwick. What was that one? With
Jack,
I don't think so.
Jack Nicholson is the devil that Cher and it's a couple other amazing actresses. They summon the devil because they want to fuck. And then he shows up as like a big horny.
Oh, Witches of Eastwick.
This is incredible.
It's pretty good.
I only ever remember the end of that movie, which is so unhinged.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is. So yeah, it's Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer are the main like witches of Eastwick who summon Jack Nicholson to be their weird fuck devil daddy.
Fuck devil daddy.
Who among us can say they haven't done that? I mean, if I had a nickel.
Yeah, right.
Because this is a Nick Cage podcast, how would you rate Nick Cage's performance in this?
I feel like I'm probably less of a Nicolas Cage scholar than most of the obviously the host of this podcast or mostly the other guests on this podcast. But he rises to the camp level that is required of a movie that thinks it's an opera without music. I think this is the most appropriate place for that level of melodrama, the most applicable lane for that kind of acting to be in, for that ridiculous. Like, there's a moment when he like scratches his face with the wooden hand. Just like, it's not even like, there's not even like a lampshade hung on it. You know, they're just like at breakfast the morning after. And he's like with his wooden hand, just scratches his face casually. And keeps like, I bet the director didn't have to say that to him. I bet he came up with that. I bet he was like, yeah, this is a normal thing.
I love how much this movie rises to Nicolas Cage's camp level. Like, I feel like everybody just brought themselves to his level because he was on this movie.
It's such a great performance overall. I love the over the top hamming. It's like, bring me the big knife,
Chrissy.
Yeah,
but then he'll have
got Nick Cage. But when you put Nick
Cage, like, yeah,
but,
cut my throat.
But, when he gives her the speech about how like love's messy and like nothing's perfect, snow's perfect. And he gives this really impassioned, beautiful performance, and just the next line just falls so flat. And it's just kind of like, oh yeah, still in a Cage movie.
But he is charming. It's young Nick Cage. He's got his fucked up teeth. Yeah. He has his original hair.
I think that it's the opposite. It's not that the movie, the rest of the movie rises to Nicolas Cage's level. It's that he, like, he's new. I mean, he's a Coppola, so he like is in film or whatever.
He's but, done like, a few he's, things at this point.
Yeah,
he's not as established as Cher. Like, if we're producers sitting around the table, like, who should we cast for this? Like, I don't think that Nicolas Cage is like an A at the time would have been like an A list.
It wasn't Nick Cage. It wasn't Nick Cage. Cher refused to do the movie if they didn't hire Nick Cage because of Peggy Sue Got Married, because she wanted a crazy guy to play a crazy guy.
And like, it's not like the movie knows he's crazy. Like, somehow the movie doesn't know he's crazy. Cause I'm like, okay, here's my weird little theoretic thing. Like, I think early in the movie, I think the beginning of the movie, it's like, this is a regular naturalistic acting delivery of lines as usual film. We see Cher in like, just like the schlubbiest outfit you can possibly imagine. And then like, it's like the conflict happens between normal life and like, what if you lived like an opera? And I feel like what the movie is saying is like, just fucking live high camp. Just like live your life like a fucking opera. And like everyone's life gets massive and super like romantic only after she starts to accept that things can be big and dramatic and campy. So it's like the thesis of the movie is like the conflict between normal life and high camp, and like camp wins because she, once she goes to the opera and has the tears running down her face, it's like sold. Okay, yeah, I do want to choose the guy with no hands. I do want to fucking choose the crazy man who's getting a knife to cut his throat 2 minutes into meeting me.
Her life with Johnny would have been so like boring and just a straight play.
It would have been milquetoast fuck.
Yeah. But her life with Nicolas Cage has so many like just unidentifiable opportunities.
Opportunities? Opportunities?
Yeah. Yeah, you can have that one. I'll give it to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
The big lean into camera was really nice for that too.
For this audio format. Uh-huh.
It's one of our strongest suits.
Yeah. Lean into camera. Right. Gross. God, I hate you guys. Was that Axel F? It wasn't.
I mean, you control our microphones. This is on you.
Yeah. You have the power to stop this.
I do. I do have that power.
It's thanking... good. Go watch it.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lauren.
It's
wow, good. Banger.
Thank you.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, noted. Thank you, guys.
Good. No shit. It made the slick scene.
Yeah, it's true.
So did it.
Yeah, Olivia. Lauren, your face seems to indicate that you did not know that we called it the slick scene for the sweet 16 instead, because we're gross.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it tracks. Not the Knicks team being a Nicolas Cage.
That's way affiliated. Too good. Stop.
Not affiliated.
Would be easy.
Yeah, too simple.
It'd be hard to like transition from the Knicks team to the Master 8.
Yeah,
and then the Final Four skin.
Oh.
Yeah. We're chilling.
Okay, and then what? And then what? Go on. What a good one.
Big so now that we've head? Really laid that
oh, it's a face
there.
Off. After once you get once you get one against the other, it is face off.
Now that we've really laid that out there, do you want to promote yourself at all?
I'd like to formally associate my brand with the Slick's Teen and the Final Four skin. My Instagram handle is freeman.band, Freeman with one E. Unlike Morgan, freeman.band. Nice. I swear I talk pretty one day.
Yeah, me too. Me words good.
Yeah.
Banana.
Perfect. Fantastic.
So let's wrap this thing up.
Okay. Well...
So Moonstruck versus Army of One.
And we have pretty compelling arguments from both, I feel.
I mean, both movies arguably have some of the most like extreme Nick Cage in his career in terms of performances at very wildly different times in his career, just starting out and kind of in that realm of, is he done?
Yeah. The slump.
Reinventing.
Yeah.
That's a nicer way of saying the slump.
Mm. I've been there. I'm reinventing as well.
So am I. Mine involves more dresses.
So, okay. Moonstruck, we have good arguments of just strong ensemble cast, mm-hmm. strong thematic purposes or usage.
Yeah. Thanks, Lauren.
Mm.
Great. I mean, fucking cover to cover, every scene, great. Every performance, great. Like that movie, like, just goes through so well and goes at such a clip because there's never a moment that's wasted.
Yeah. But on the flip side, also an ensemble.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage is maybe a third of the film.
He's the second lead.
He's the second lead, which means there's another lead and there's other characters. Like he's not dominating the film.
No.
At all. It's a share film.
Steals the show, though.
I don't know. I think Cher still owns the movie. Nicolas Cage, strong performance, memorable performance. I love it. It's a lot of fun.
Like I mentioned earlier when I'm talking to Lauren, like I forgot, like just there are so many great scenes of him just really acting his heart out and such great line delivery. And just there's so much mm-hmm. passion in that performance.
Yeah, no, he didn't leave anything on the table. No. He committed really hard to this film. It was a lot of fun. It is a lot of fun to watch. It has not stopped being a good film.
Man.
Yeah. And then, man, there is Army of One. It's a roller coaster that is only ups and screaming downs. And they're not even bad downs. It's just like so much fun throughout. There's a couple moments where the build feels a little long.
Mm-hmm.
Couple scenes where it doesn't seem like we're just having fun.
There's some stuff when he's in Pakistan and some of the extended just kind of like meandering that there's little jokes there, but it's not really doing much for the film.
Yeah, it's just jokes at that moment, which to a degree serve the purpose of showing a passage of time. But even the passage of time is not that much. Like that first time when he's in Pakistan and you get like 8-10 events. And then it's like after that, it's like day two.
Yeah,
and
that was like, day one.
OK, I do still die when I see that day two screen. And I'm just like, oh, my God, he fucking shot his wad so early. And then the rest of the time, he's just walking around an alleyway swinging a sword, which is so much fun. But narratively, it's got a slump in that part of the film.
I think where that movie really does shine the best is watching his interactions and his relationships with his friends and girlfriend. And yeah, you need to get him away from that to show the depths of how crazy that person is, but it's not served great at times. And the shit with him and Russell Brand is just so bad.
I guess we have like a weird antithesis of like, or dichotomy of, we have a well-developed world
mm-hmm.
with Moonstruck where everybody like has a life.
Yeah.
Every character has something beyond the screen and a very well-developed character, which makes sense because he's a real person. And the way he interacts with people is just very genuine.
I would like to also, so one thing we talked about with Army of One is how much of a character and how much of a character performance this is, where you don't see Nick Cage in it. But at the same time, Moonstruck's still so early in his career, so all those things we come to have known Nick Cage as are still developing. So it's not like he's writing the character, the personage of Nick Cage for that performance either.
No, no, he's not like writing his own coattails for sure. And a lot of the things that really end up defining his career and his style are very much in development and kind of being, I wouldn't say workshopped, but they're on display here in a way that
there's a rawness to both performances. I think
I might say that he's got Gary more polished.
But he's also a much older actor at that point.
Yes. Yeah, it's like 30 some odd years later.
Yeah.
So, No, terrific pairing. Very difficult. Not something, it's not a one-to-one.
No, it's not.
I struggle with this, and I have a lot of biases, but...
You just like to see yourself on the big screen.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I was pretty confident going into this that I'm just like, of course I'm going to pick Moonstruck, but especially talking about Army of One with Eric and how much fun it is just to discuss. There's so much to be said for that. I could recommend Moonstruck to almost anyone. I could recommend Army of One to a much smaller group of people. Because I know, while I think it's fun, and while most of my friends, I think, will enjoy it for what it is, I know so many people who would just be completely turned off by that film at so many levels.
Yeah, there is a level that you have to overcome for Army of One. I mean, I would recommend either movie to anybody, circumstantially. Army of One, I have to be able to recommend it to somebody who's going to watch it. Well, okay. You can watch Army of One in passing and love it. You can watch Army of One a second time and love it. You can watch Army of One a fourth time and love it. You can watch Moonstruck four times and love it. But if you're not paying attention...
You need to pay attention that first time for sure.
At least a little bit. It's got... lacy amounts of like script and story and through line, but it's not an anytime film, and I'm not saying that to talk myself out of it. This is a legitimately tough one for me. It's more limited in the recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah. Everybody definitely agrees.
Agreed.
It's a smarter recommendation.
Agreed.
As far as like film critique goes, it's arguably got more going for it. A tighter script, more concise editing.
It's got a lot of first draft energy on a lot of them, with a lot of the writing, I feel.
Oh yeah.
Moonstruck?
Oh, Army of One, sorry. But were you talking about Moonstruck?
Yeah, I was talking about Moonstruck.
Oh, okay. I got lost in the conversation. No, I agree with both those things. As much as I love Army of One, I think I might have to go Moonstruck. I think there's just more there and a wider range of emotion and just so much that he just sells in that role. It's not just, while it's a great joke, it's not just one joke for 90 minutes. I won't get tired of Johnny, Ronnie. Thanks, Peter.
Fantastic.
I had to refer to Peter's notes. Sorry for calling you a dick fuck. There's a certain point where I'm going to get tired of listening to Gary. Also, I know Gary's, and oh my God, like there's an aspect of that character that reminds me of people I know. And I just, it's funny, it's charming, but it's also mildly upsetting as someone who lives with obnoxiously.
You live alone.
Barry.
Self-dunk.
As someone who lives with a lot of overbearing and like big emotions and emotional swings, I can relate to Ronnie a lot more. And, I don't know. I love seeing that on the big screen.
Yeah, it's a fantastic character, and the role is well cast in Nicolas Cage. My struggle is it comes down all the way back to episode two. Which one is like my Nicolas Cage performance recommendation? One of them is a Nicolas Cage movie. One of them is a great movie with Nicolas Cage. I have to fight every fiber in my being. But I'm going to recommend you watch Army of One and proceed with Moonstruck in the bracket.
No, I think that's fair. I recommend people watch Army of One.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think Moonstruck is the better choice.
You're never going to be upset watching Army of One. If you want to watch Army of One, watch Army of One.
Yes. If you don't want to watch Army of One, don't watch Army of One.
Yeah. No, you should still do it. But
yeah. I mean, do it.
Know what you're
like,
getting into.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no. Moonstruck is it's a terrific film. It's well put together. It's got feelings. It's got.
You hate feelings, though.
Yeah. But I mean, other people don't. So I have to, I have to bend for people. It's a well put together, ultimately enjoyable film that includes Cher dominantly.
Yep.
But Nicolas Cage where it counts.
Yeah.
And his hand is wooden, because he lost it in a slicer. He lost his hand. He lost his bride.
Johnny has his hand. Johnny has my bride, his bride.
Do you want to do that one again?
He has Johnny's bride.
He does.
Good night, folks.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say we did also have our first drawing for a Patreon prize.
Yeah.
Today. I think I would like to keep something like that going. If you want to win something weirdly random and totally Nicolas Cage related, definitely.
We got some stickers we can give you.
It's yeah. Like we're going to do a little bit of more promotional stuff on Patreon. If you want to support us and be a part of that, that's fucking awesome. We are Cage Match on Patreon. And thank you to our Sparkle buddies, Josh, Sean, Josie, Rico, Matt, Adam, and Bill. And to our cage dancers, Ira, John, Freeman, Lance, Nathan, and Cameron.
It wasn't a dick pic. I just really want to put that out there. It was not a picture of a wiener.
It's a Nick pic.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming to Cage Match, calling a roundabout way of meeting Nicolas Cage, where all your podcast court needs are served.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Do, 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 do.
Whack, whack, whack.
Bye-bye.
So, okay, this got me thinking. Do you think Sting makes sexual partners sign non-completes? How cool would it be if Discord had like a hearing impaired setting that would auto transcribe everything we say? Ooh. And then she had to just listen to us, or read us on mute.
It's a fucking nightmare.
Just figure out like all the AI fuck ups.
Yep.
And then
it's like, I think
like,
I'm following.
It's like, no, they couldn't possibly be talking about wieners for a 10th minute straight. It's like, I don't know.
Can't we?
That is our podcast. That's our bread and butter.
My palest shade is white.
Okay.
But we're all pale shades of white here. How many of us have owned a sword at one point in our life?
I never have. I kind of always was jealous of people who had them, but I never had one.
So that makes you the coolest person in this room.
That actually makes you the whitest person of just like, I yeah. wish I owned
I wanted
a sword,
one, but I couldn't get one.
Okay, so
I lusted for swords.
No, I'm gonna fucking show how much of a fucking nerd I was. So you owned a katana.
I've owned a couple swords.
Yes. Okay. I've owned one sword, and it wasn't even a real sword. It was like a replica for a video game. You want to guess what it was?
Okay, wait. I also owned a replica sword, but from a book series.
Okay.
I am stumped on both of these.
Guess the nerdiest sword you can.
A Buster sword.
Close.
I mean, that was going to be my guess.
One number up.
One.
Ooh, Final Fantasy VIII?
Yeah, the Gunblade.
Oh, wow.
Squall's Gunblade, yeah.
Did it have a little charm on it?
Yeah.
Wow. Nice. All right.
And it had a working trigger, too.
Yeah, sick. Did it shoot?
No. But the Gunblade didn't shoot either. It was an explosive shell.
Yeah. All right. What did you have?
So from the Wheel of Time series, I had a replica of Randall Thor's Heron Mark blade.
So, nerds.
Yeah. Yeah. That's hella nerdy.
That's dorky as shit.
Yeah. But also fucking fantastic fantasy series.
True. What? True. Okay, if you could have owned a nerdy ass sword, what would you want?
Oh, man. I probably got into swords when I read like Redwall. So it would have been like a mouse sword.
So like a drink like olive pick?
Pretty much.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah.
Boy, if I could have owned a better sword than what I had, what would be the coolest sword?
I mean, given my love of the Highlander series, I would have wanted like the fucking.
That's a good pick.
Ooh, yeah. The Highlander sword, the blade sword would have been a great one. Yeah. I would have loved the blade sword. Also fulfilling katana at the same time. Oh, you know what? I would love to have a replica of Gary's sword from Army of One.
Perfect.
Yeah. I would put it right next to my replica of the Beast.